cybersecurity now has become so broad. It's kind of, and I always tell folks that are asking me this, it's like being a doctor. Do you want to be a podiatrist or do you want to be an ear, nose, and throat doctor?
There will always be somebody stronger, faster, and smarter than you. Surviving depends on your adaptability to change. Those who are the most adaptable are dialed in. Hello, hello. Welcome back to the show. This is Dialed In. I'm your host, Kyle Burt. Today's guest is a former ballerina turned CISO, an unexpected bourbon enthusiast, and she is currently the CISO, the Chief Information Security Officer for Elevate, a fintech company here in Dallas, Texas. So let's bring out Jessica Nemers. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Kyle.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to a great conversation today regarding the catch-22 of cybersecurity talent and jobs. And really, it applies to a lot of different fields, but it's that whole paradigm of no experience, no job, but no job, no experience. So we're going to get into that today. Before we do, why don't we learn a little bit more about Jessica Nemers? Like, tell us your backstory.
Okay. I have a very unique backstory. So as you mentioned, I was a professional ballerina. I was trained since the age of six to dance professionally, got to go to SMU, Southern Methodist University, for those who aren't in Dallas, on full dance scholarship. And it was a great experience. And then I left to pursue my professional career. Due to funding, for Dallas, we had to close our doors. So that's how I lost my job as a ballerina. And by different circumstances, I ended up over at EDS. And from then, electronic data systems at the time, I moved into IT. And then I headed over to Perot Systems in the late 90s. Fell absolutely in love with data centers. For those that know me, you know, they even to this day, if I get near a data center, I'm like, I got to go through it. And that started my love for security. And then I had the company called me to do some other things, which I really benefited from. So I actually ended up leading a global training organization. And I had teams in the US and Mexico and Romania and India, which was amazing. And then starting in about 2015, I got to pivot full time back into security. And I just recently joined Elevate Credit as their chief security officer. So I made a job change during COVID. It's rumored that I have an office. I've never seen it. This is my home office. And so it's been really unique, changing jobs and getting to know my team and kind of leading through such a strange time right now in COVID.
Yeah, no, most definitely. And you're kind of hiding it now, but you're wearing a shirt with the number one sales of 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. I went ahead and bought the t-shirt, you know, because we've been there. We're still there. Had to get the t-shirt. So,
great. And I'm drinking quite possibly the world's most secure beverage today, just in light of having you on. So looking forward to a good talk here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So, you're very humble with the fact that you're hiding, like it should say Jessica Nemers, comma, CISSP, right? definitely. That experience from ballerina to CISO, like that's a huge change and an inspiring change, right? So
Thank you. Thank you. I feel overwhelmingly blessed. It's been a fantastic journey. I've had so many supporting me, whether it's my leadership, but I've also had some of the most talented teams I could ever lead, and they helped me, you know, be a great leader. I do not claim credit at all. It was their work. So it's been great. And I have a really, really smart team over at Elevate. So we're doing some really great stuff right now.
That is awesome. I'm going to ask you some questions about bourbon later.
Okay. We could spend the next hour talking about bourbon.
I'll save those for later towards the end. But okay. So jumping into the topic here. So let's talk about the catch 22 and maybe help you set the stage a little bit of what is this paradigm that and the way you see it.
Yeah. So, you know, we keep hearing right now we have a shortage of cybersecurity talent. It's estimated, you know, in 2021, we're going to have 3.5 million deficit of cybersecurity professionals that we need to fill these positions. And, you know, I've been thinking about this. And when I took my CISSP exam and became fully certified at the time, there were only 11% were women in cybersecurity. And by this year or in last year, we're up to 20%. So that's good. It's growing because for the longest time at these security conferences, it was, you know, everyone thought I was a vendor because I was one of the few women at the conference. And then in the Fortune 500, only 14% of CISOs or CSOs are women. So I definitely, I've been working to bring awareness to this and to encourage opportunities for more women to enter cybersecurity jobs. But just in general, we have a cybersecurity shortage. And I keep hearing about that, but I really started thinking about it as a security leader and what I'm seeing and talking with my other friends and colleagues in the marketplace is we have very tight budgets. Everybody has very tight security budgets. And with that, we end up having small teams. And when you have a small team and you need to get a lot done and you need to defend the company and manage all of that risk, you want an experienced security professional. So we're not going to hire someone that doesn't have experience. Well, we've got all these, you know, college kids now coming out of these cybersecurity programs. And that's great. They've been educated. They've got some certifications. But sorry, we can't hire you because we need someone experienced. Well, how are they supposed to get experience if they can't get hired onto these teams? So I've been really exploring how can we bridge that gap between education and getting them, you know, on the ground and running. So it really does seem to be a catch 22 here.
Absolutely. I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but, you know, part of it probably stems from the fact that, you know, cybersecurity is definitely not a new industry. It's like, it's been around since the internet, right. Just in military and whatnot, how it's evolved to where it is now. But it seems to be, and that's just my perspective, it seems to be that, you know, over the last, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years to now, even now, it's been like it's taken a more precedented place inside the organization than it ever has before. Like, oh, we actually have to care about cybersecurity, like more and more. And I think it's still, you know, it's still fairly immature in that cycle of, you know, it's not like the chief marketing officer in the marketing department. It's still fairly immature compared to like marketing, right? Would you agree with that?
Yes and no. So I agree in the way that I think the CISO or the CSO role has very much changed in, I would say, in the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years. Cybersecurity used to be a function. Now it is a risk to companies. And I think the position itself isn't, the function's not new, but yes, the position of cybersecurity as a risk for the company is new. And a lot of companies still are not recognizing that. They're looking at a meltdown of our systems or an act of God, you know, floods, tornadoes, things like that when I'm looking at their business continuity plan and identifying what risk could come of the company. Most companies really should have a cyber attack as one of their top three risks. And we keep seeing cases that, you know, one click of a phishing email, you know, can bring a company act to an absolute halt. And if it doesn't, it could cost them millions of dollars, either in cleanup or extortion payments to cyber criminals. So, it's definitely a top risk in, you know, we've got to take a risk-based approach to this.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a very interesting perspective. I do see it that way as well. Yeah, I mean, when you break it down that way, that security as a function versus security as a risk, that makes a lot of sense. That companies are like, aha, we need to look at this as a risk now. Like, we need to start looking at this. Yes. That's part of the change we've been seeing. And obviously, what's been driving that is the increasing cyber attacks and the increasing perception in the news and media of the cyber attacks, and like how that all affects the CEOs who are making these decisions, right?
Yeah. And the stock price, if you're a publicly traded company, that cyber attack could, you know, your stockholders can say, we don't have a lot of confidence in you. Your stock could go way down. You know, one manufacturing company had to delay their earnings for 5 weeks. They couldn't even close the books because of a ransomware attack. And their stock price was plummeting during that time. So it definitely has catastrophic events. But a lot of companies think, well, we're not a target because we're not that big. And unfortunately, with cybercrime now, it's an equal opportunity. Small to medium businesses are really getting hit hard. And cyber criminals are just going after anyone really who will click on an email or maybe have an open port somewhere.
Oh yeah, most definitely. It's not to be like fear mongering, but you know, there is a lot of need for concern around it, right? And that's why you have the right team in place. And then that goes back to the catch-22 of, you know, how do we give some of these kids that are coming out of these programs experience so that they can actually get the job? Or how do we give someone who's a ballerina experience so that she can get the job as a CISO, right? Like how does that, what's the process there? Like, what do you think, what are some things that you think could be changed there or some ideas you have?
Yeah, so that's, so right now I'm mentoring several women, and some of them are actually in their careers right now and they want to make a pivot into cybersecurity. So I'm seeing young women contacting me who are still in college, like, hey, I'm thinking about going this route or should I get this certification? And then there's other women saying, how do I even begin? So I think getting some education out there, helping those who want, men and women who want to enter the cyber field, and understanding number one of what does it mean to be a cybersecurity professional today? You don't have to be a certified ethical hacker to be in cybersecurity. It's a really great career. And if that's your forte, then I say absolutely go for it. Certified pen testers are definitely needed. But cybersecurity now has become so broad. It's kind of, and I always tell folks that are asking me this, it's like being a doctor. Do you want to be a podiatrist or do you want to be an ear, nose, and throat doctor? I mean, there's the word, you know, the title doctor has so many different connotations and different specialties. Cyber now, you could be engineering a firewall or you can be working with agencies doing controls. You can do governance, you can do risk, you can do audit, security education. That's, you know, one of my backgrounds is in training, and that's very near and dear to my heart and something that I'm sure for those who follow me on LinkedIn can hear me beating my drum all the time. A lot of companies, if they would really look to invest in their security awareness program, they could probably mitigate a lot of the phishing risk and possible cyber attacks through phishing just from awareness without spending tons of money on, you know, cybersecurity solutions and tools. They have their place. You do need them. But that's something, you know, having training expertise and understanding of cybersecurity is a great career and a great asset. So I think that's really the first, is understanding what you could go into if you wanted to enter the cyber career. And then the second is, then we need to have some avenues. I'm really starting to think of the concept of the farm team. So in baseball, we have farm teams and you get to play, you play in the stadium, you have scouts looking at you. And, you know, if it's the right place, right time, right skill set, you get picked up in the majors. And we need that farm team right now. I think we've got education. There's a lot of nonprofits out there that are looking at education. There's community colleges. There's four-year universities. their educational opportunities. But again, if I'm 42 years old and I've been in a whole nother career and I want to pivot in, do I really want to stop and go back to college for 4 years and pay, you know, thousands of dollars to try to get into cyber? So I think that's really where we as security professionals need to start thinking about.
Oh yeah, no, that's a great point you brought up about the farm team. How would you propose like that would kind of take place? Would that be like something that like an individual company would stand up their own like their own farm team, their own B team, right? Or would that be like more like a shared resource type of thing between companies?
I would like to see it as a shared resource. So we've got, and it should be a shared resource from like a feeder program, maybe out of the educational opportunities, but we've got a lot of opportunities. And I, if any of our vendors are on the web podcast right now, or if they're listening to this afterwards, our vendors, our security vendors are awesome in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. They do a lot of sponsorship for events, you know, Elevate Exchange, a lot of our conferences, our dinners, they host virtual happy hours. And during these times, they help educate us on what they do. Well, wouldn't that be a great idea to maybe sponsor an up-and-coming position on a farm team and maybe even have these folks work for you on the vendor side to learn about your technology, to meet with security professionals, and then maybe do a job rotation. Then maybe they can work for one of your customers and we could do an internship that way. I think there's a lot of ways that we in the security community can collaborate and get some practical experience and fast. And during that time, we can be watching over these folks and really vet their talents and experienced cyber leaders like me and you know, Raymond's on there too. Hey, Raymond. And hi, Lisa. And, you know, some of the folks on the chat too, is we can then provide mentorship. Like, hey, we've watched your performance. We've gotten some feedback from our network here. And it seems like you're probably best suited maybe for over here. Have you thought about, you know, application security versus infrastructure security? And I think that would be a really interesting proposition. And I've got a lot of thoughts in my head on that. So I look forward in the next year or two just talking to, again, some of our colleagues, some of our vendors. We've got managed service providers out there. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it takes someone coming out of a four-year cybersecurity program with a bachelor's degree to get some experience monitoring logs. So maybe coming into managed service provider where you're working in that entry level and you can just get an idea. So, hey, Russ, how are you?
Yeah, I got to stop you right there so that we don't forget this because... Yeah. No, seriously, that is such a great idea. Go back and watch this segment again. I do that to market just for our internal team so we can go back and find that segment as well. And just for your pleasure too, so that you can see like that's a fantastic idea. Like that makes perfect sense. Have the vendors pay for this farm team and it's shared across a resource pool of whoever kind of wants to join in on it. That's great. That's fantastic. That would give you the experience. That would give you the experience that you need to get the job. Like it's a lot of different angles. What do you think about the duality of, you know, and I don't want to butcher this, but I've heard it somewhere else before. And not to discredit people with years of experience, right? But you can have years of experience or you can have experience in your years, right? It doesn't always equal. Just because you have 30 years experience doesn't mean that experience is better than the experience that I have in 5 years. You know, it probably is. Common sense would want you to think that it is, but that's not always the case either, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, some of the most talented cybersecurity professionals I've seen have very little formal education. A lot of them, you know, just had a knack for it or a passion for it. I think that's, again, where when we're clear on what opportunities are part of this career and then what skills align with those opportunities, I think you can get people up and running faster with a much richer experience if you're partnering the right skills with the right position. I've seen a couple of infrastructure folks in the past really find their niche on the application side, application security side, and they just ran with it. And they just didn't, feel comfortable, or they didn't have that passion on the infrastructure side, and then vice versa. The Gartner Security and Risk Virtual Conference is going on this week, and we were just listening to a couple of presentations this morning, and again, talking about, what makes you an effective cybersecurity professional in front of the board. Every conference right now seems to be how to present to the board. Well, I've got a training and communications background, and I've had a lot of success with that because I'm a good storyteller. It's not that I'm making up lies, but that's my forte. So my forte was not reverse engineering malware. It's not coding. So hacking and coding that's not my passion. But being able to explain to a non-technical audience some very technical concepts of vulnerabilities or, threats or vectors and things like that has been my forte. And I've seen a lot of success with that. So again, for me as a security leader, I want to draw out your highest talent and your highest potential and make sure that you're matched with that position within cybersecurity that you can thrive. And we can benefit as a company. Because again, if all these companies are missing these cybersecurity professionals, we have a deficit, then we want our farm team to be the highest potential possible.
Absolutely. And another advantage there, being a good communicator, being a good storyteller, also dot the line that makes you a good marketer. And if you're a good marketer, you can market yourself to get the job, right? So it definitely is all connected. So you can't just be a cybersecurity expert and stop at that. You need to develop those other skills, communication skills, and learn how
to. That's your bomb. I'm going to do your value bomb. Boom. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And a lot of people think, this is coming from my training background. Why on earth would you send a cybersecurity professional through sales training? Well, if you are a CISO out there or you're aspiring to be a CISO, your job is to sell your leadership on why they need to fund your security program. If you can't sell them on that, and I agree with Robin in the comments, you should go work for a vendor. We jokingly call it the dark side, but again, my vendors and my VARs, I love you guys. And I think that's great. I think you should understand how to sell. And that's just part of this business. And again, if you are an exceptional firewall engineer, you become a subject matter expert, and that's your forte, then we need you. So I'm not going to push you into sales training, but I think all of us need to really understand a little bit of sales, a lot of communication, especially in this field.
Absolutely. Raymond King, shout out to you, man. He said, CyberSec is now a board level topic. This is to a statement we made a few minutes ago. There have been even suggestions that all boards of publicly traded companies should have a cybersecurity expert as a member.
Yes.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. And in those that do, a lot of times, again, my colleagues that are CISOs are like, oh man, but they put pressure on you and you have to come with the answers, but it's good. It keeps you in check. And it also keeps, CISOs can't come in and, bend the truth or spin it a little bit. Having a board member with some cyber expertise, they're going to pick through and really hold you accountable, but it actually holds the whole company accountable, which I think is really important. And we all know that, the hardest part about our jobs, CISOs and CSOs, is that if something does happen at the company, you know, they're going to have to look and blame somebody, and they're going to probably fire somebody. So I always am very transparent, and I want to make sure that my leadership is in full understanding of what the risk is, what our challenges are, that we've all made the right decision together. And that way, you know, I'm hoping to keep my job like all of us that are working in this profession.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what has a shorter tenure, CISO or Chief Revenue Officer. Like those two have a big challenge, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a pretty good, knock on wood, I've got a pretty good track record so far, but we'll it's what keeps me up at night, but also gets me up in the morning to come to work, and I'm pretty excited about it. So
I mean, these days you don't have to go that far. Just got to pass the bourbon room and then you're in your office, right?
I know, it's right there, y'all. I can almost see the bottle of Booker's on the sideboard right now. So I wanted to make sure my happy hour location was pretty close to my office, because working from home, I'm here for a while.
You know that as soon as you can, it's right there, right?
Yeah. And yeah.
Absolutely. I love that. What would you say, despite the obvious things, right? What would you say is something that's been like the biggest surprise to you over the last few months or so?
Probably, I mean, in general, how rapidly the pandemic has not only changed business, but closed businesses and affected so many individuals. So I lost my job as ballerina because our company went bankrupt due to lack of funding. For those who are aware of ballet or the arts community, most companies, they're not even having nutcrackers this year. Both of my sons are also ballet dancers. One of my sons is a professional with Colorado Ballet. They're furloughed right now. So artists, performers, bartenders, servers, hotel workers, cruise ship dancers. So many of these people were just instantly out of work. And to see how that has affected our economy and, again, just these industries has been pretty shocking. And Landmark restaurants in Dallas and Denver, who have been around, and I know this, because my son lives in Denver, they've been around since the 40s. They've gone under. They've lasted through all of this time and then this pandemic, and now they're, not here. State Fair, so I think it's just been shocking how fast it moved throughout Europe coming to the U.S. and then how it has devastated our economy. And in the business, we're working with consumers, and we support banks and looking, and we service the subprime market. There are 2/3 of Americans are in need of help right now, and especially those with a credit score under 700. These are the folks that do live paycheck to paycheck, and when something like this comes in, it's just shocking.
Yeah, no, it's tough to see, and we always wish we can do more for it,
Yeah, and I agree. I'm looking at some of the comments. It is a domino effect. Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that was Robin Austin.
Yeah.
One affects another. It's so true.
Yeah. So we're, again, I'm a big plan B kind of person. And I've been talking a lot to my sons about that, because again, you think that, well, this is what I do for a living, so that's all I'm going to do. But I think, and also talking to, other women that I'm mentoring, we all have to be thinking of plan B. And I think being lifelong learners, understanding opportunities out there in kind of hot markets, hot jobs, joining the farm team, I think would just really not only help the cybersecurity shortage, but also help the economy overall, because I know a lot of folks that are suddenly out of jobs that need jobs right now.
Yeah. We had Jeanette Wayne on a couple of weeks back, and she talked about being multidisciplinary, right? So yeah. Being a cybersecurity expert, but also being a bourbon enthusiast and a ballerina, right? Because yeah. I don't know, like those things could all collide and make you more valuable in each one respectively, right?
Yeah, I agree. And that podcast with Jeanette, you guys that are listening to this one, look back on that. It was fantastic. And your story too, Kyle. I mean, that's, you guys have really overcome so much, and then the pivot to go on to the next thing and to stay positive. And that's just, it really says a lot about you. So.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. It was a good one. But back to you here. So, what do you think is the biggest challenge in your role right now that you have yet to overcome?
I think it's the changes right now. So, changing to the cloud, and it's different. It's a little different for each industry. So cybersecurity, and if you're a CISO, there's a baseline of risk that you're going to assume and manage. But for each industry, it's a little bit different. I came from, recently I was with commercial metals company for 10 and a half years. That risk was more to the infrastructure. We had a very delicate inner core, you're in the middle of a steel mill and some hacker prevents a melt shop from shutting down properly. It can burn down the melt shop. It can kill people. And so I was really focused on that. Here on the fintech side for financial industry, it's data. We've got so much data and it's very sensitive data, and we are charged with protecting our customers and their data. As we're moving it from traditional methods like on-premise servers to cloud storage, that presents a challenge. So we are really shifting into the cloud now. We're changing a lot of our infrastructure strategy. I'm super excited. Our brands are changing and they're evolving with Elevate. So I think our biggest one right now is really, what are best practices for finding, security risk and vulnerabilities with applications? And also, how do we secure that data in the cloud? That would definitely be mine.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for sharing that. We have a question from Raymond. Should companies do more cross-training or cross-pollination by moving talent from other areas of IT into CyberSec? Associates with good track records and strong learning agility, for example.
Yes, absolutely. I'm huge on cross-training. And that is one of the things. So cross-training can help the challenge of the cyber talent shortage. Absolutely. And you don't necessarily have to have an IT background. I think for a lot of people, having the IT background lends itself well. I've seen some network administrators come over for network security and they do an amazing job. One of my security engineers on my team was with governance, risk, and compliance. He came over from the governance side and into a technical role and is killing it. So I think within security teams too, I think having a formal cross-training program would benefit a lot of companies. So you need some redundancy because it does seem like a lot of security teams tend to work in silos. So AppSec, application security is over here and infrastructure security is over there. And I think from a GRC side, when you're talking about controls, you need to understand the concepts and you need to understand the technology. And so the GRC folks on my team, I'm always really surprised how much they know about the technology, but it's good. And if I needed to borrow them, and this is the biggest one for a major security incident, a big event, like a ransomware attack, when it's all hands on deck, if you've done some cross training within your security team, those hands are going to be able to reach across and be stronger than having all hands on deck, but you're waiting on someone to do something because they're the only ones that can do it. I think that's really, Raymond, I think that's a really important point.
Excellent. So Jessica, you talked earlier about mentoring some young women into cybersecurity. Do you yourself, or have you yourself been influenced by mentors, and something you can share?
Absolutely. And I was actually filling out a questionnaire for another thing. And so I was just thinking about this last night. This has nothing to do with cyber. But early in the 90s, when I was a ballerina, we had very small salaries. So a lot of us became Mary Kay cosmetic consultants. And that was back when Mary Kay Ash was still alive. And she would speak not only at corporate when we went for our meetings, but to, you know, and being in Dallas, I got to be closer to her, but listening at the conferences. And she was a huge inspiration to me. Just again, from the pivot, right before she started the company, her husband died. And back in the 60s, a woman was not allowed to start her own business. And so she had to face that, and she overcame that, and she built an empire. So I think that that has been a huge influence in my life. And then I got to work for Mr. Perot at Perot Systems, which I know at least one of my ex-Perot friends are on the feed today. And he was truly inspirational too. And just being able to work right there in the building with him, being able to accompany him on speaking engagements, and just hearing his story, you know, just the Tiger teams and those who, you know, he said, find me winners. And if you can't find me winners, then find me those who hate to lose. So I think I got a lot of drive from that. And they were a company that really hired for character and trained for skills, and they saw potential in people. And if you had the potential, you kind of got thrown in there. So yes, Russ Murrell said he's a former Perot bot too.
Well, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, we always joke we knew each other in 1999 BC. That's before children. So we were all young and new in our, you know, young in our IT careers, and that it was a great time to, you know, be in the heyday of the dot-com boom.
So I'm making like a common delineation here, but it sounds like the common factor there is their storytelling abilities. And you mentioned yourself that you've become a great storyteller. Would you kind of connect those dots? Is that yourself as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, both of them definitely. And everybody that's, you know, ever heard Mr. Perot speak, he did speak in stories and just talking about, you know, the Tiger teams back in the day and how they would bring in cots and they wouldn't go home and they would just stay in the room until they finished and solved the problem. And I think taking something, a concept, into something that people can relate to. So one of my slides that I use for boards is a house. I came up with this because talking about a defense in depth strategy, and people would kind of like, okay. But talking about your home is something that they can relate to. So talking about the importance of your fence and the locks and the doors in the house, and, you know, where your belongings are stored, you know, really your data. So I start talking about and running fire drills. Those are the equivalent of phishing tests, you know, so preparing your family like we prepare our employees. So I think taking this house analogy, and I have a house slide and I have all of our technology around it, helps them understand what the defense in depth technology or defense in depth strategy means to your company. So that's, yeah, I think storytelling is definitely an art that I'm continuing to refine. And I think security professionals too can benefit from asking for feedback. So I'm always asking for feedback. You know, how did you receive my message? What could have been clearer for you? Yes, I agree with Robin too, making it personal, not just business. Yep. I think because people, again, can tap into that.
Yeah. I mean, that taps into your earlier point too about being able to sell. Like if you came to me and said, oh, Kyle, you wouldn't buy a house without locks on it, right? Like, of course not. Like it makes it easier. It makes it easier to sell that message too, whatever the lock equivalent is in cybersecurity. Like, of course you wouldn't. Of course you want a fence. Of course you want a security system. Of course you need a safe. So like, yeah, it makes it easier to prove the point of like, hey, we need this and this is why.
Yeah, one of the conferences, and I love going to conferences and collaborating with our peers and our vendors again, because it's always that one nugget that you're like, I love that analogy. But this one guy giving a presentation, he said, you know, they're always asking for our return on investment on security products. He said, so I've kind of turned it back to them and asked, what is your return on investment on your fence around your pool in the backyard? I don't know. Well, yeah, you don't know until maybe it prevented a child from walking into your backyard and drowning in your pool. That's now your fence is worth a lot of money. And that's what's so challenging. A lot of security products sit and we don't have a return on investment. But if we do get hit, then suddenly we see the value. So, and again, that's one of those things that we security professionals, you know, face too, is do you wait to get hit and then suddenly your cyber budget's huge, you know, like, oh, go out and buy this and that because we don't want to get hit again. So, but I thought that analogy was really, really good. And I've used that a couple of times.
No, I absolutely love that too. A couple of people that I follow, like they'll say things like, you know, what's the ROI of a basketball? Like to me, nothing, but to LeBron James, that's a huge ROI, right? So it's also subjective to the company too, like depending on the context of the situation.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell me what's the biggest area right now of focus that you want to learn more about, either related to your role as CISO or unrelated?
Probably more in the banking industry specifically. So, since I'm still relatively new at Elevate, I was very dialed into typical vectors attacks, things about manufacturing. I was able to interface with a lot of folks in the manufacturing space. So I think it just keeping an understanding of banking, the banks that we support, what their concerns are, and APIs, you know, how are these APIs connecting different companies together? You know, you apply for a loan, it's going to go through another system to get funding and the bank will fund it, you know. So I think just learning about that is going to be my main focus over the next year.
Awesome.
Or beyond.
Yeah, that'll help you further connect the dots, the analogies of CISO and banking in your current role. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
So guys, last chance for questions. Go ahead and punch those questions in right now. And in the meantime, at this point, let's talk bourbon for a second.
Okay. Let's talk bourbon.
So Jessica, obviously, you self-proclaimed it as well, and I agree with it. Basically, you're the surprising bourbon enthusiast. You wouldn't look at you and be like, oh, bourbon enthusiast, right? And that's kind of the point for you. But you fell in love with bourbon, right?
So I did.
That story.
So in 2018, when I was going to all these security conferences, they usually finished with a happy hour and we would all, you know, go to the bar. And what I was noticing throughout really in that year is the guys were talking all about bourbon and not about sports. So I thought, oh, okay, that's the usual talk has changed. And so I got kind of curious and I thought, well, it's kind of, you know, finding that common ground, and if you can't beat them, join them. So I decided to learn about bourbon. So my New Year's resolution in January of 2019 was to learn about bourbon. And as I started to learn about it, I absolutely loved it. And now it is an absolute obsession.
What's the most surprising fact that you learned about bourbon that you were just like, whoa?
How good it tastes. I don't mix it with anything. I started out so for those who are starting out, I started out with whiskey sours just to kind of get an idea about whiskey and then learning about bourbon. But I just how different it tastes and how good it tastes.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So you got a bourbon collection behind you. What's your favorite?
Oh, that's so hard.
I asked it. Asking the tough questions here on Dialed In.
Probably the Buffalo Trace products, Blanton's. It's definitely probably my favorite. I like the Weller's. Michter's is really good too. I don't have one favorite. I guess if I was pressed, it would be Blanton's. I like them a little bit sweeter.
Awesome. So guys, if you're watching and you want to get into cybersecurity, learn all about bourbon. Yes. Help you advance quickly.
Yeah.
we got one last question here. It's from Robin. How has being a mom helped you become a leader? That's a great question.
Oh, that's a really good question. I think probably the one thing that has helped is being able to draw out what a particular person needs of me to guide them. So my children are very different. So, you know, one child might need me to, this is kind of, you know, just child, not me as a leader with my team. So not that I don't want it to sound weird, but like me to just hug him. Like when he's having a bad day, it's more physical touch, just hug him. Where my other child is always like, do not touch me. And he would prefer to kind of analyze it and talk logically through it. So I think looking at my dynamic with them and guiding them and my walk as being a servant leader is understanding everyone on my team is very different and they have very different needs as far as help or encouragement, recognition, and guidance. So I've kind of learned to try my best to tailor my approach to what they need instead of me just doing it from the way I like to do things. So that's a good question.
So yeah, I mean, tying that back in with being a good communicator, like learning how to listen, not just with your ears, but with your eyes, it sounds like too, like being able to recognize, hey, like this person could probably use more help in this direction or that direction. It's something you just kind of feel, right?
Yeah. And I, as part of my career path, I became a Myers-Briggs practitioner, Myers-Briggs type indicator, MBTI practitioner. So I also kind of start learning people's personality types and again, try to lead toward their personality type and find that common ground. So that's been an interesting spin too.
I love it. Well, as we're wrapping up here, we got about 5 minutes left. So time for the Dialed In five last questions. Right. We're going to pick up the pace a little bit here with some deep questions too, like this one. What is the most important thing you've ever learned in life?
To not let others tell you you can't do it.
Love that. Love that. Yeah. So true. Shutting out the outside noise.
Yep.
Just living your head. I love it.
Yep.
What would you say makes you feel inspired or like your best self besides bourbon? Because we already know that.
Actually, it's seeing my team succeed. So it's not my personal success. It's the success of the teams that I'm either a part of or that I lead.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. What is the single best book or publication that you've ever read or would recommend to others?
Oh, that one's hard. I'm kind of minded on Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it's by Robert
Kiyosaki.
That's right. Yeah. Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I have, you know, one young adult and one teen. And I think with this instant gratification generation that we've got going, that we need to take a step back and really look at financial literacy. And I think the pandemic has just shown a huge light on that.
Oh yeah. Nobody has their finances on a massive level. Yep.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Raymond's going to interject a question here real quick. Just a quick one. What's your MBTI type?
ISTJ. Oh, sorry, ESTJ. I'm not an introvert. ESTJ, sorry.
ESTJ, got it. If you could have dinner with anyone that has ever lived, could be no longer living, who would it be and why?
Oh my goodness. Ooh, that one's so hard.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I have to probably Martin Luther King.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would just to be able to tap into his power, but his calm and his quiet, in peaceful protesting and just how to be that powerful without being loud and over the top. Yeah. It's just very, it's always struck me ever since I was a little kid.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. And Jessica, now that you are dialed in, what does being dialed in mean to you?
Wow. I think it means, you know, being part of a really important community and being able to exchange ideas and become a resource to others and, you know, find resources within this community.
Awesome. Jessica, I appreciate you being on the show today. Yeah. Guys, go connect with Jessica. Her LinkedIn profile, we'll tag her down below. Reach out to her on LinkedIn. Any other place that they should connect with you? Oh, your bourbon. You have a bourbon blog on Instagram, right?
I do. It's Jessica_Nimmers. It's not supposed to be just bourbon, but yeah, it's mostly bourbon. So yeah, follow me on Instagram. That's more of my personal life, but my wins. I had three wins over the weekend when I went to Austin. So I've got three new bourbons that I'm really excited about.
Thanks for listening to Dialed In. This show is brought to you by Acuerdo.io, the world's first orchestration agency for the future of work. Go check us out at Acuerdo.io. This show could also not be put together without great partners, Robin Austin and Casey Yarbrough of Elevate Exchange, membership for IT leaders. And remember, to win in life, to win in business, to win in your career, it's not about being the strongest, the fastest, or the smartest, simply about being the most adaptable to change, the most dialed in.